Welcome to the Home Building Hero, where we help you become the hero of your new home by providing you all the information that you need. No matter if you're an industry pro, you're building, or you're buying, we got you covered here at the Home Building Hero. We're coming to you live today from the LP Studios here in Wisconsin. I'm your host, David Bellman, president of Bellman Homes. Thank you for tuning in today. Good day to you. Today's topic is size guidelines for homes. All right, so you guys are thinking about building a house. Maybe you're in the actual design process with the architect, or you're going to be having someone draw a home for you. Or for that matter, maybe you have a blueprint or a floor plan you've been studying and looking at. But how do you know that the room sizes and the sizes of the home in general are going to be right for you? There's not really any sort of hard, fast guidelines for those kind of things, right? Let's be honest. There are some codes and some minimums set forth in the code, and that certainly is helpful. But there's not really a guide for best practices. And the problem is that most people, when they're looking at homes, they don't build every day. Let's be honest. You don't build a home every day or even every couple years. So typically, people don't always look at the room dimensions as much as they should. And sometimes that can be a source of frustration after they move into their home. And you just don't know, right, until you actually move in and live in that home. So I'm going to go over some minimum size guidelines for you to help you achieve the things that you might want to achieve in your home. And keep in mind with this particular podcast that not every single item I mention is something that you have to do. Codes can vary from municipality to municipality and state to state. So be mindful of that. You're always going to want to check with your architect and, of course, with your building inspector before you move forward. But these are some minimum sizes that you would want to obtain in your home to achieve certain things that you want. So let's begin. We're going to start on the outside. So a couple things that people sometimes want and need help with. Let's talk first if you want or you desire to have a front porch on your home. Now, you can put a front porch in that's probably about as small as 4 feet, because if you have railing or anything, you're going to need that extra just to meet the 3-foot threshold for a code. Now, 4 foot rather front porch is not going to be something that you're really going to use for sitting or those types of things. It's going to be for shelter from the rain. It's going to be somewhere where you can stand and look out. Okay, that would be your bare minimum. If you desire instead to have like maybe a small swing on your porch, you would want, well, let's just start with sitting. If you want to sit on a porch, have a bench, that kind of thing, you're going to want 5 feet as a minimum, because you're going to need 2 feet for that bench and 3 feet just to kind of clear it. If you want a swinging type of seat on it, you're going to want 6 to 7 feet. 6 feet would be bare minimum. It's going to be very tight kind of getting in and out of there, because again, that swing is going to be roughly about 3 feet. It's going to go back and forth 1 foot either direction. So, you know, you're already at 5 feet right there and there's no room to walk with that. So that's why 6 feet would be very tight. You could kind of make it work, but 7 feet would then be ideal. So a lot of times you got to kind of, you know, just do the math, right? Or find the thing that you want to put in your home and then work the math around it. Like a piano, for example, you know, look up the dimensions and then, you know, plan some space around it to walk through it. So those are the kind of things that you have to sort of be mindful of. And one of the biggest pieces of advice that I can give you right off the bat is, you know, if you do have a specific piece of furniture that you're going to be putting in the home, be it a desk, be it a piano, be it something else, make sure that you understand the measurements of it. You know, do a scaled cutout, scale off the room, scale off that piece of furniture, and just see how it relates. That's super helpful. Okay, back to the outside. So we talked about porches a little bit. Let's talk about decks. Now, again, this is something that varies tremendously, because typically you're dealing with setbacks on the outside of your home, from the side, the rear. You might have other things like easements and things in the way. So take this with a grain of salt, because this certainly can be very different from place to place. But a minimum size for a deck that I would feel comfortable building is 14 by 12. And that's just the minimum that I would recommend. And, for budgetary purposes, that's, like a lot of our models will put something similar, either 14 by 12 or 14 by 14. Typically, we like to go out only about 14 feet from the back of the home, because once you start getting further out, a lot of times you're investing in a lot more piers, structural supports in the ground. It just starts to get very big, and for support and everything gets a little more difficult. Then as far as length, well, ideally, if you can go bigger, if you're using a AZEK type deck, Fiberon type deck, or any kind of a preformed plastic PVC type of decking, 19 feet is a good length to use. And the reason that you want to use 19 feet is a lot of these deck boards come between a 19 and a 20 foot length. And so if you stay with that parameter, you won't have any seams going across your deck. You can just run one board and be done with it. And it's a very clean look. Anytime you have seams, there's always a risk of water getting in there, expanding and contracting, and having issues there. So, if you can do a little bigger deck, a 14 foot deep by 19 foot length deck is a great size, because you don't get all the seams and things like that. Now, certainly, if you are doing a higher end home, and maybe you've got, let's say it's a lake home, you got this beautiful view, you certainly may want to put a deck across the entire back of the home. Maybe it's 45 feet wide. It's certainly, if it's in your budget, do what you want. But if you want a minimum size, 12 by 14 would be the bare minimum that I would do. 14 by 19 is a very nice size, gives you a little extra room for some seating and things, and it also works really well with the type of decking materials that you're going to work with. Now, if you're doing a solid wood deck, you can really make it however you want. There's a lot more flexibility there, but you're going to have seams and those kind of things. And of course, the maintenance that goes along with it. All right, let's talk about one of the biggest frustration areas for customers in new homes, the garage. All right, the garage always drives people nuts down the road, because you don't always know what you're going to be putting in it until you move in. Your cars are going to change. People buy and change cars all the time. So what may have worked before may not work now, and so on and so forth. And it's constantly changing and evolving. And especially if you have little kids, the toys come and go, and then the adult toys get bigger and bigger, like the motorcycles and things like that. And then you have your lawnmowers and all your yard tools. So I always tell people, with your garage, make it as big as you can afford. And as of course, as big as it'll allow on the lot, because garage space is inexpensive to build relative to the rest of the house, and it's always useful to have extra storage. No one's ever come back to me and said, "You gave me too much garage." I've never, ever heard that comment. So make the garage a little bit bigger if you can. Now, here's some guidelines and some sizes. I have a 24 foot deep garage, and I am so glad that I have a 24 foot deep garage. Here's a couple reasons why that is a really good depth. And a lot of garages, especially if it's like a track home builder, they might do a 20 by 20 garage. That's really tough to make work. Kind of the move up type buyer and builder are typically going to give you at least a 22 foot deep garage, which is quite a bit better. But 24 is really what you want to shoot for if you can, for the following reasons. If you have a larger pickup truck, SUV, if you're driving around like a Yukon, or you're like me and you have a, pickup truck, extended cab pickup truck, 24 feet is really where you want to go. Can you fit it in a 22 or 22 and a half foot deep garage? Yes. But in my garage, for example, I have the 24. I fit my pickup truck in there, and guess what? Right in front of it, I have a freezer, and I have my lawn spreader for fertilizer and some things like that in front of it. Now, it's very tight. I don't have a lot of room to work around that. Ideally, 25 would be even better in that situation, but I can make it work with 24. And I have room for some storage, which is really, really nice. The other really cool thing about the 24 foot is that in the other section of my garage, I'm able to park my lawnmower and my sports car there. And I have enough room for all of it. Now, if I didn't have 24 feet, it would never work. And this is not a little lawnmower. I live on some acreage, so this is not like your little Simplicity lawnmower you buy at Home Depot or whatever. This is a 60-inch deck Gravely, you know, zero turn lawnmower. So it's kind of a big unit, and I have to park it sideways. I can't park it the long way, but I can park it sideways, and then I can pull my car in, and it works out just great. And I'd never be able to do that if I didn't have at least 24 feet of depth. So that's another thing to consider. The other thing to consider is if you are putting stairs from the garage to the basement into your home, you really do need to make your garage bigger as well. Don't just put the stairs in. The stairs from the garage to the basement, if you have a typical like an 8-foot basement, they're going to be 4 foot wide by about 12 feet long. So it's going to take up a pretty big chunk of your basement. So, you know, if you have a 22-foot garage and you put a 4-foot staircase in, you know, going, you know, perpendicular, I guess, not really perpendicular, but going horizontal with your back wall of the garage. Let's use that example. Now you're down to 18 feet of depth there. Now you can get a very small car there, but if you don't make that garage bigger, you run the risk of not even being able to park a vehicle there. And you may have to just use it for bikes and lawnmowers and that kind of stuff. And maybe you're okay with that. But be very cognizant of that. If you're adding those stairs from the garage to the basement, you are going to want to make that garage at least 2 feet bigger just so you can park a standard vehicle in there. Ideally, make it as big as that staircase in that area so that you have a standard type of depth. So something to keep in mind there as well. Okay, so those are some of your outdoor things that you're going to want to be cognizant of. On the inside, here's some other things that you guys are going to want to watch out for. Hallways. Hallways are typically, by code, required to be 3 feet wide. That's okay, but if you've been in homes with 3 foot wide hallways, they feel pretty cramped. We actually go with 3 foot four, 40 inch wide hallways. It just gives a better feeling of space. It also gives you a little more room when you're bringing furniture in, just walking down the hallway. If someone else is walking down the hallway, it just feels a lot better. It gives you a better sense of space. Now, again, all these things are constrained by your lot and the size of home that you're going to build. If you're going to build a smaller home, you might be able to get away with, and you probably are going to need to make those things the bare minimum. Let's talk about the kitchen, because the kitchen is always very important as well. So first thing with kitchens is, again, this is going to be very, very size dependent. We're not going to go room by room and talk about every room and, well, David says I should have this size room and this size room. It's what you need. It's what's going to work for your floor plan, and there's no point in going to every single room. We're going to talk about the key areas. So kitchen, and let's say you're going to put an island in the kitchen. Ideally, if you want an island in the kitchen from a space standpoint and making it feel functional, I really suggest having an island be 5 feet long at a minimum. Now, that's a little bit bigger than what you could go with. You could build a 3-foot island, certainly can do that. But typically about a 5-foot island is really nice because it gives you some more flexibility if you do want to put a sink in it, you want to put a dishwasher in it. Also, just that rectangular shape, instead of just having something that's, you know, maybe close to being square, kind of feels better. It just has a little bit more mass to it, and certainly you can go larger. I mean, the trend right now is they have these big, you know, 8 foot long or 7.5 foot long islands with the big top on it and, you know, big long rectangle, making that a centerpiece of your kitchen. I get that, but ideally around 5 feet is a really good length for the island. And also I like odd numbers as well with those kind of things. For some reason, the odd number just tends to work well in a house. It just feels better. Because again, you know, if you have 3 foot walkway, then you got a 5 foot island, and then you got another 3 foot, you know, it just kind of feels right, and it kind of makes the space work out a little bit better. Now let's talk about a pantry. So you want a walk-in pantry. Typically about 5x5 is the area that you're going to want to allocate for a walk-in pantry. Can it be 5x6? Certainly 5x8. Hey, even better. But 5x5 would be about the minimum I would suggest for a walk-in pantry, because again, if you have a door swinging into the pantry, by the time you get the shelves in there and you have room just to stand around, you're going to want that. Can you build it 5x4? Certainly. You can make it work. Then you're not going to have shelving on one side. It's going to feel very tight. 5x5 is an ideal size to start with for something like that. All right, let's talk. You know, those are the basic components, I think, in a kitchen. We can certainly get into a lot more detail here, but I think you get the picture there. And every home is different, so it's hard to really dive too far into that. But let's talk about another key area that people focus a lot of time on, and that's the master bath, the owner's bath, whatever you want to call it. We're not here to discuss the merits of naming of rooms anymore. But the primary bathroom, if you will, there's a lot of different things that can go into that. And, you know, let's start with the tub. Oh, what size should I make my tub? I'm not a big guy, okay? I'm 5'6" and change. So I'm not a big guy. I've sat in and laid in a 5-foot tub before. It certainly can work. It's a little cramped. So ideally, if you're going to put a tub in or a soaking tub, you certainly can get a lot of 5-foot tubs, but I would go at a minimum with a 6-foot tub, a 72-inch long tub, if you can fit it in there. That's going to give you a lot more room to kind of ease all the way in, get really good coverage, and if you're a little bit larger person, you're going to really appreciate that. So I would try and do the 72-inch if you can. If you can't, a 50-inch will still work, but you might have to bend your knees or you might not be able to get a full soak in. All right, let's talk about showers now, because that's another thing that's very important and changing from time to time. And a 3x4 shower is sort of a standard, you know, shower that you're going to find in a spec home, a model home, and a lot of new construction. Now, of course, these days people are putting more and more emphasis on showers, especially if there's not a tub in the bathroom. These showers are getting bigger and bigger. What a lot of people are asking for these days, you know, is, I mean, 3x5 is generally a little bit better dimension if you're going to have a tiled shower. But we're seeing a lot of people go with a 4x6 shower. And that really gives you a good sense of space. You can do some interesting things with it where you have a mix of maybe tile, or you have, you know, a solid material in your shower. And then it leaves you some space for either some glass, some benches, and things like that. So plus, it's a little wider too, so it just kind of feels like you got a little more space, especially if you start putting components into the shower, you know, digital components, wall sprays, ceiling tiles, those kind of things. 4x6 really, really feels nice. And then, of course, if you want something more dramatic, or you want kind of a snail shower, those kind of things, they can go on and on from size from there. But 4x6 is really, if you want a nice, comfortable feeling shower, without really completely nuking your budget, that's a good size to go with. It'll allow you for the benches, even a niche, and some other nice things in your shower. All right, now let's talk about a couple other rooms very quickly. Let's say you're going to have a home office. Now, we have some houses designed right now where they have like what we call a pocket office, where it's really, you know, maybe 5x4, and it's literally just a desk in an area with a wall. That's great for something small like paying bills or for your kids to do homework in. But if it's somewhere you're going to be working in all day, you're probably not going to be very happy with that. And if you work from home multiple days during the week, that's going to be very difficult to use that space and spread out a lot of work. It's great for checking emails or paying bills. That's about it. I ideally like a 10x12 space for an office as a minimum. The reason that I like it a little bit more rectangular versus square is that typically office furniture, especially desks, they can tend to be a little longer. That gives you some more interesting elements when you've got a rectangular shape with how you lay out the furniture. It also gives you the ability, if you do have a desk and a chair, and if you want to put chairs on the other side of the desk, then you can kind of take advantage of that extra length in the room. So that really makes things feel nice. And ideally too, if you've got file cabinets and things like that, you're always going to appreciate that extra length, because you can always add in a whole another section of files with that type of space. All right. How about bedrooms? Especially guest bedrooms, you know, owner's suite, master bedroom, whatever you want to call it. Those vary dramatically in homes, and there's no ideal size. You know, I would say typically you want to have a 13x15 as a bare minimum for a room like that, just so that you can get the queen bed and those kind of things. You know, most of the homes that we build are going to be, you know, more of a 14x17 and up, you know, from that experience. And some are, you know, 19 feet by 15 feet and so on and so forth. But, you know, 13 by 15 would probably be the bare minimum. For your other bedrooms, for kids, for guest bedrooms, ideally 12 by 11 is a really good size. It feels good. It gives you a little bit of extra room, a little more room for activities, so to speak, but that generally has a good feel of space. Can you get by with a 10 by 12 bedroom? Absolutely. That'll work. But you know, that extra foot of width just makes the room feel better. And certainly we can go larger. We have a lot of homes where they're 11 by 13 or something like that, some variation of that. Those always feel really good. Whenever you have like a 13 foot plus secondary and third bedroom, those are some nice size rooms. And a lot of people appreciate that if they've been in a smaller home, to have that little bit of extra space, especially with kids. It gives a little more room for toys and different things like that. If you can swing that, especially if it's upstairs, you've got room over the existing living area. If you can get a good 12 or 13 foot length in one or two of those rooms, those end up being very nice bedrooms. And same with closets, you know, walk-in closet, like a wardrobe closet for your primary bedroom, tons and tons of configurations. You want something that's probably at least 6 feet long. Ideally, if you have more clothes, you might want 8 or 9 feet long by six. And then if you start getting into the really fancy designs where you've got, you know, a center workpiece area and clothing racks and shelving and stuff all the way around, boy, you could go, I'm just doing math in my head here. Sorry. You're going to probably go, you could go 12 foot, width wide. You could do a 12 by 12 room and have a center island in there. And that'd be pretty darn nice. But again, that's out of the reach for a lot of people. The last thing I want to talk about from a size standpoint is the family room, and especially when you have something like a two-story great room. And this is one where the perspective can get really out of whack. So if you have a two-story great room, chances are that ceiling is going to be roughly about 17 feet high, right? 8 foot on the first floor, maybe 9 foot, or I'm sorry, 8 foot on the second floor, 9 foot on the first floor, 17 feet high. My general rule of thumb is if you have a volume ceiling like that, you want to have at least one of the dimensions as long as that height. Otherwise, the room feels very, very disjointed and out of place. So for a 17-foot ceiling, you'd want to have at least one of the dimensions be 17 feet as well, and then have the other size be somewhat similar to it. Otherwise, the room's going to feel really, really out of scale. So for example, my home, I have a 20 by 17 great room. It's a nice size room with a two-story ceiling that happens to be 17 feet high. And the sense of space there is really, really good. It feels right. It's a good feeling space. We actually designed a home not too long ago. It's a ranch home, and it's got a 16-foot ceiling, but the room is all, one of the dimensions is only 14 feet, and I think it's like 14 by 16. So we have the 16 and the ceiling and stuff, but and the length, but it just feels off to me. And I was like, boy, if this room was a foot or 2 feet bigger, this whole thing would just feel so much better. So that's something that I think is very important. Now, if you just have a very like a slope ceiling that's 14 feet high, try and make sure that room is around that same size, because it'll feel a lot better when you have that perspective like that. It won't feel quite off or just out of place. So there you have it. There are some suggested guidelines for room sizes. Hopefully you guys found this super helpful. And if you have any other thoughts or any other rooms you want to hear about, certainly let me know. And we'd be glad to cover that in a future episode. And of course, if you guys enjoy the content, as always, please, wherever you listen to the podcast, give us a 5-star, write a sentence or two about what you love about Home Building Hero. That helps more people find the program as we continue to grow. And proud to announce, and we'll probably do something more about this later, I was able to check some stats, and the Home Building Hero is in the top 2.5% in the world, top 2.5% in the world for construction podcasts by this ranking system. That is pretty amazing, and that is because you guys keep tuning in. So thank you guys so much for the kind support. It is truly appreciated.
Once again, thank you for tuning in to the Home Building Hero, broadcasting live from the Bellman Home Studio. If you haven't already, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any future content. Until next time, I'm David Bellman, signing off.